TV Campfire Podcast.
Have you seen it yet? OMG.
We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken record.
Oh, no! We're fans.
It just goes up from there.
Oh! All right, we got to a whole different level.
No, you didn't.
We talk TV.
She is the most useless one-dimensional character ever.
Premiere of Spartacus.
Vengeance.
Welcome to the show.
This is podcast number 115, and I am Libya, your host. And this week we have returning guests.
Susie from Sherman Oaks.
And Allison from Tarzana.
Welcome, Allison from Tarzana. I have in the news, first thing up is Catherine Tate has been added as a series regular for The Office. And my reaction is, they're bringing back The Office? What? So, I don't even know what to do with that news. Yeah. Like, I guess that was on the list of renewed shows, and I just totally didn't pay attention to it.
Didn't see it either.
Yeah, so, I like Catherine Tate.
I do too, and I'm wondering, it's interesting, because I watched the ones that she was in specifically, because I love her so much, because I think, you know, Tennant and Tate were the best.
She's so great.
And but it's interesting, because I'm wondering if they think by having her there, is it going to leverage the show again? Because the ratings, as far as I know, have not been
they've been pretty bad. So yeah.
I'm wondering where they're going to go with that. It's kind of interesting. So, all right, well, bully for her.
And the other piece of news is that Magic City has been renewed by Starz. And I was one of the people that was like, I don't know about this Magic City, but now we only have like one more episode. Well, this week
we have had one more.
Yes, this week I haven't watched it yet, but this is the finale, and I'm kind of excited. I'm like, wow, this is getting pretty good. Except that I'm about to get off track about my hatred for the older son. But we'll talk about Magic City on the next podcast for the finale and everything, and we'll actually talk about all the shows that we are skipping this week. Most notably, the second to last episode of Game of Thrones, which my fellow podcasters were like, what? We're not going to talk about Game of Thrones. But this is a very, very special episode where we're going to talk about Sherlock and of season two and Sherlock only. But in the news, also in the news area, before we get into that, I wanted to talk about all the summer shows we have to look forward to, because part of the reason why we're doing this podcast is there's not that many shows to talk about. But that will be alleviated relatively soon. With June 3rd, which is this week, we get Longmire. It's going to be on A&E.
Yes, Katie Sackhoff.
Is that Katie Sackhoff?
Yes.
See, I will do an aside real quick. Katie Sackhoff was fantastic as Starbuck. And I have yet to see her in anything else where she's just as good.
Well, they're saying she's doing pretty damn good in this.
All right. I already have the pilot set up on my DVR, so that's cool. Next is a show called Saving Hope, which is going to be on NBC. And I saw the trailer, and now I don't remember it. I don't remember what it's about, but I think it's a doctor show. It sounds like a doctor show. I'm guessing at this point. I'm totally lying to you.
It's now that I'm remembering it, suddenly it came to me. I think it's a combination of like doctor show and supernatural type thing. The guy like goes
into he's a ghost.
Coma. Yeah, he goes into a coma in the hospital, and then he spends apparently the rest of the season just sort of wandering around trying to get people to notice him. You know,
wandering
around ghost-like.
Right, yeah. And the sci-fi connection is that it's starring Michael Shanks. He's the ghost.
Yes, is it really?
Yeah, I was like, Michael Shanks landed a network show. Alrighty. What up?
Okay.
I don't know about it. It looks like it could be a real treacle festival. It really does.
A treacle? What does that mean?
It's treacle sweetened.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Kind of sappy.
Yes, molasses is another word.
Well, that's why they premiered it in the summer, I'm sure.
It's for the girls who are missing private practice or something. I don't know.
All right, and that's premiering June 7th. And June 14th, finally, we have Suits back, which I'm very excited about. You don't watch Suits?
Mm-mm.
You should watch Suits.
It's one of those ones where I'm not... Let me get through White Collar first.
Okay. But I really like Suits. I'd say I like Suits and White Collar about the same. Okay. And Suits has Gina Torres.
Who's hot. Yeah, so okay. That's true. That's all I'm going to say.
Yes. And Burn Notice comes back as well on the 14th. I think I'm done with Burn Notice. I think I'm
willing to give it a go. You know what? Because it's candy. It's like I'll watch it. And, you know, I might be checking mail or something at the same time. But, damn, it's fun. It's candy.
It is fun, but it used to be good.
This is true. It used to be more gripping, but the formula's kind of kicking
in. It's so tired.
Yeah.
Then that's June 14th again. June 24th is Newsroom on HBO, which I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah, again. Yeah.
So excited.
That looks awesome.
It has to be. Look who's doing it, man.
Yeah. And I guess that same week, or actually a week before, is True Blood, right?
Yes.
True Blood is next week.
Next Sunday. Sooner.
Yeah, it's next Sunday. Yeah,
it's
True Blood.
It's right around the corner.
And as much as I trash True Blood, I am totally going to watch the season because they have added my Chris Maloney. And I put the my emphasis. My Chris Maloney.
He's yours. Yes. He's yours. But you know, I have to say the one picture I saw.
He looks pretty badass,
fins.
Too.
Yes. Yeah.
That's one thing. Yes. I had no idea flipping through the magazine. I'm like, that looks like... Oh, it is. No idea he was going to be on that. So
yeah. Right. And he's got a big role. Like, I heard he was going to guest star, and I was like, oh, okay. But he looks like he has a pretty big role. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So plus, Russell is back, and that's always good.
Oh, that's true.
Nice. Okay.
They dug him up. Yeah. The idiot that dug him up.
Yeah.
Let's see. Next, I'm looking in. Now we go to July. And July 9th is a show called Perception on TNT, which... I'm like, mainly I'm angry because it looks like we already have a show. Like, there's a million shows like this. It's basically some brilliant guy who's off his meds, so he's a little bit crazy, but only some people think he's crazy, but he sees everything and he helps him solve crimes. I'm like, I've already watched a bunch of shows like this already. So I'm not sure about that. Like,
Let's hear it for originality.
Yeah, no, right. Hey, if it works for 5 people, it'll work for 20.
Right.
Sure.
Jeez.
White Collar, as you mentioned, comes back July 10th.
Trying to catch up for that. Good.
Yes. I love White Collar. And I haven't written the dates down, but on TNT they have Rizzoli and Isles comes back, and I think that's the beginning of July as well. I think that's around July 9th. Yep. And I love Rizzoli and Isles.
I haven't seen it yet, but I like the two of them.
Yeah, they're great.
It's just that it's unfortunately on my list.
It's a buddy cop show, but with women.
Yeah. Yeah.
Except that both of them are not cops. Yep. One of them is the medical examiner.
Doctor. I was going to say medical examiner. Yeah. Doctor. And the other one is what?
It's a cop.
She's the cop. Okay.
Yeah. So they have that cop, but they do the whole buddy thing. And except because it's women, now it's more like, I don't know. Because, no, you know how the buddy cop, they always, like, you know, there's that thing between them?
Yeah.
With the women there, it's definitely a thing between them because they have...
Well, the guys have the bromance. And
yeah, I don't know what you call it for the females. It's the sister man? No, that doesn't sound good.
Yeah, something else. Yeah.
But it's definitely there because they'll have scenes where, like, they're just hanging out, just laying on a bed. I was like, I don't hang out with my girlfriends hanging out on a bed. That just doesn't really happen. That's only guys think that's what women do.
That must be what it is.
But... Anyway.
The last time I did that, I was about 14 years
old. Yeah, I know. That's what I was thinking. I was like, I haven't done that in quite a while. But I like it on the show. The show really works for me. I really like the two of them together. The next one is Warehouse 13 and Alphas.
Yay!
Come back July 23rd. So that's a while.
It's right after Comic-Con.
Oh, good. Nice. Yeah. Nicely caught there. Mm-hmm. Not all of us will be going to Comic-Con.
Hell yes.
And then the last show I have is because what is that show? Oh my goodness, I'm totally blind. The Closer is finishing this summer, and I think it starts up relatively soon. And they're gonna have their last group of like 10 episodes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And basically, they're spinning themselves off, but it's almost the same show. So it's like Brenda, who's the main character, she's leaving, and so they're changing the name of the show and keeping almost the entire cast.
So it's even worse than Private Practice offshoot from Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah, it's like literally it's just including her husband. I was like, how is her husband staying on the show?
So how does this change the show then? What because makes it worthy of the change?
Because Mary McDonnell is now going to be the new star.
Oh, okay.
So Mary McDonnell is now the lead, but it's all the same. Everybody else is the same. And they're changing the name to Major Crimes. Okay. And I'm like... If this had happened with any other star other than Mary McDonnell, I would be done with the show. But I'm like, God, it's Mary McDonnell. I have to watch it. Because I love her. And I mean, they've introduced her like 2 seasons ago on the show. And she really works on the show. So, yeah, I'm totally going to watch it.
All right.
And I think that's all I have on my... one more. Political Animal, USA, in July. That's all I... Okay, Allison, you have something.
Yeah, there's just one, and I can't believe that I'm even bothering to mention it, considering how much I loathed it last year, but Falling Skies, the second season that I can't believe gave to it, is going to be debuting on the 17th of this month.
Well, the only reason I'm going to watch that, and I don't know why I forgot that one, but I am going to watch it because they changed the writers. So the writers are now Battlestar Galactica writers.
Oh. Yeah, so there may be some small hope there.
Except for I saw a poster. I saw a poster for the new season and I saw it. It made me roll my eyes. it was like driving down some street and the big billboard had it said Falling Skies. It had the father and his two older son, and they're all like in silhouette. And the quote was, "Get off our planet." I was like,
"But you know what? That works." I actually be like, "Okay, I want to see that."
I just started laughing. I was like, "Really? That's your catchphrase? Get off our planet."
Okay, I take it back about the glimmer of hope about the writing.
But I'm just kind of like, if one of
they're not necessarily responsible for the advertising.
No, they're not. But if a character actually says that on the show, I will just fall out laughing. That's just it. That's done. But yes,
I suggest watching that with a whole lot of booze.
I was gonna say, absolutely, absolutely.
I think that's the only way you can get through an episode of that show.
All right, so now that's all the news I have, and we're now ready for the main entree, which is Sherlock, and we will talk about what's the first episode is called, A Scandal in.
Might I make
El Gravia?
Wait!
I have two comments to make. One. This is the perfect time for us to do this particular podcast on Sherlock because it's the BBC version, which is so terribly British, and it is the Queen's Jubilee this weekend. So, excellent timing, might I add.
Yes, I did that on purpose.
Yes, you worked out.
So raise a cup of tea and have a skim.
Absolutely. So perfect timing for us, I think, is very appropriate. And also, Allison, you can't see this, neither can anyone listening, but I'm wearing my Sherlock t-shirt. So
yes, she is.
There you go.
I commented on that when she walked in the door. I was like, nice.
So there you go. All right, that's all I needed.
A Scandal in Bulgaria?
Belgravia,
yes.
Okay, I can't even read my own handwriting. All right, so this is the first episode back of season two, and I actually rewatched them recently, and this one was interesting because it's kind of like this is the first introduction of the idea, the concept that people are starting to know who Sherlock is.
Yep.
Like, so he's getting all these random clients coming in and telling him crazy stuff, and of course his response is always bored. but of course. Every case, everything that we get to see is actually a clue, which you don't realize until later. But someone else talk.
Oh yeah, no, I was one thing first.
I didn't want to sum up the entire episode.
One of the first things that we should pay attention to is, and this is really really I found so interesting. I didn't even know it until after I saw it. But do you know? Okay, we know how we ended the first season with the showdown at the poolside, correct?
Right.
Well. They did it so seamlessly, but they shot this a year later.
Oh.
The beginning. You would think that, maybe they finished up that scene to get ready for the next one. No. They actually went back and painstakingly recreated everything from what they were wearing to the hairstyles to everything, the lighting, all of it. It was a year or so between when they actually shot
that
the ending.
That is impressive.
Well, it is. So, kudos to the continuity person.
Absolutely,
on that.
Absolutely. Now, I think it was either Stephen Moffat himself or it was either Moffat, Gatiss, or... Benedict Cumberbatch himself, one of the three, I've read so much for so long on this whole thing, one of them mentioned that if you pay really, really close attention, the very anal fans will find little things that are off, but for the rest of us, had no idea that they didn't just cut it right there and start again, you know?
Yeah.
So that was amazing.
At first, I think my first inclination was that it was anticlimactic, that they had this big build-up, great cliffhanger, and then...
The phone call.
And then the phone call, he just walks off. I was like, really? Yeah. That's it? But once you see the whole episode and you see who called and what it was all about, then it's less anticlimactic. It actually kind of works pretty well, I think.
Well, and I think they did it too because, it was kind of a... For me, on the plane watching it again, I was like with the headphones and everything, so everything was like magnifying the sounds. And I was like, I've seen this before, so no surprises. But when Moriarty answers the phone and he's like, basically like, what do you want? And then he's like, what? And he yells, I kind of jumped in my seat. I was like, okay... I already know this guy's kind of crazy, but he's like extra like crazy on top with a cherry.
Right.
Like you kind of, I think that helped reinforce again for the new season that you're dealing with someone who's really off his rocker.
Well, I think at first, in first season, when they introduced Moriarty, I was very not impressed. I really thought, like, really? Yeah. This is the guy from Moriarty?
This is the big bad.
But he actually impressed me this second season. I was like, okay.
Well, he got the BAFTA for it.
Yeah.
He was a supporting actor. He got the BAFTA
for Moriarty. Yeah, he was pretty good. Yeah. I actually have to take that back because I know I trash talked him in one of the earlier podcasts. But he was really good in season two, and he really convinced me he was completely insane.
Absolutely, which of course we saw as the episodes progressed through the season.
Yeah.
So yeah, so this one, I think everybody, the big talk about this one, and you know, for those of us who watched it and just were immersed in it as a story that it was this idea of Laura Pulver, you know, great actress coming in as the lady or the woman, as she's called, you know, and Irene Adler, and just this huge thing about how are they going to interpret that from the original stories and how it's been interpreted before on film. And this idea that, you know, the story is fairly familiar. You know, she comes in, she's a dominatrix this time. And that
What was she supposed to be before?
In the original story, she's actually just kind of a mysterious, obviously woman of good upbringing, but a very well manicured and maintained. She's not promiscuous at all. In fact, she's married in the original story.
Yes.
And so what she's really trying to do is she's got, I want to say, was it papers that she had the photos? She had photos, I think, in the original one, or papers or something that she was keeping that was, you know, that secret that she was keeping that we obviously see this Irene Adler having, which is on the phone now because it's modern. But it played out very similarly where, you know, the documents or the photos were hidden. And, you know, it was some European monarch or somebody, you know, from over in like Spain or Portugal or something like that was in love with her. And she basically had this, you know, these documents that could basically bribe him or something. And so it was this story. But the thing is, they kept to the true nature of it, where she kept the documents in her house, and Sherlock and Watson come and try and find out where she's hidden it in the place, because nobody can seem to find it. And the same ploy that they used in this series is exactly the same, with the distraction with the fire, except it was outside the window on the street in the original story, and Sherlock noticing where she looks, and he's like, aha, that must be where you hit it, because when there's danger, you know, a woman looks toward to save her child or the next best thing, basically. So that played out really nicely. But the whole idea of the original woman being just a very simple, upstanding woman who just was very, very clever on her own. So she was on her own, planned this whole thing so that she completely...
She didn't have Moriarty planned stuff for her.
Exactly. Yeah.
Of course, the difference in the two is that she gets away with it in the original version.
Exactly.
You know, she gets completely away scot-free and becomes known as the woman, the one who Holmes could not catch.
Yep.
You know,
exactly.
Which she is not in this version, which kind of disappointed me.
Yes. Yeah, Sherlock ends up having to save her.
Yeah, which was that was out of all three of them, that to me was probably the one that I hated the most, I have to say, because to me it felt, for exactly that reason, Allison, it's because in the original story, you know, Sherlock isn't given over to that kind of sympathy, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And so for him to be impressed with her is one thing. So they showed him being impressed with her in this one, which was fine to a point, because she was obviously the puppet of Moriarty. But that final scene where he goes to save her, I'm like, well, maybe they're pandering to the knight in shining armor, and, you know, our Sherlock has to be, you know, that much better, you know, where he's that makes him sympathetic to us. But I don't think we needed that.
It just got to me that, you know, our Sherlock also had to figure everything out and catch her.
Right. Right.
And what was so great about the original was that she didn't get caught. That Sherlock Holmes, of all people, who catches everyone, could not figure her out and could not pin her down. And she's the one who got away. And in this version, she's reduced to just, you know, yet another criminal who he catches. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, he gets, you know, as you said, he feels all sympathetic and possibly romantic towards her and rescues her at the end, you know, and she just, you know, and that made her even worse in my eyes, because at that point she lost all power as a character.
Agreed.
And just became like a damsel in distress who needed rescue.
I get what you're saying, but because I didn't read the book, I'm not influenced by that. And I really enjoyed this episode. I really liked that it showed a different side of Sherlock that I'm not sure how I felt about that side. Like, because the thing about Sherlock, he's always kind of asexual, which is part of his personality, which is fine. Yeah. And this was the first time where you had an inkling that maybe he's not completely asexual, but he's also still not really moved by, he doesn't allow anything like that to move him or to manipulate him. He was allowing her to think that she was manipulating him, which was fine, but it still allowed you to see a peek into a different kind of side of him, which I thought was really interesting. And, of course, that Watson was very jealous the whole episode.
That's true. He's like, we're not together. What was it in the warehouse when they were meeting? And he's like, he tells her, he's like, I'm not gay. And she's like, well, I am.
Like, okay. That was a great one.
Yeah. But I mean, it, as much as he denies it, like, every 5 seconds, the second that he sees that Sherlock is maybe moved by this mm-hmm. woman and is paying attention to her, mm-hmm. he's like, why is she sending you all these texts? How come you don't change the ringtone to the text? But I was just like, dude.
But you know what? It was funny because he did that and then it just like completely put the bromance with a capital B, right?
Right.
But what I think was so cute is, and of course, it's probably the way Martin Freeman played it so well, is that even though he did that and it was so funny because it was like he just was denying it and then, but like, well, you know, how is she? But he also, underneath it, you could tell that he really also was just really concerned for Sherlock and wanted to make sure. Because he knew he was essentially, without using the word incorrectly, honestly, basically had this kind of a retardation towards affections and relationships with people, literally, you know. So he's looking out for him like a little innocent brother who has no clue what he's playing with, this fire that is this woman.
Right. That is true, except for it's also undercut at the Christmas party where he doesn't remember which girlfriend he's on. And he's like, I'll walk your dog. I don't have a dog. He goes, oh, that was the other one.
Well, that says something about John's issues, definitely.
But I'm just saying that he knows every detail of Sherlock's life. He's not going to...
Yeah, that's the thing. It re-emphasizes the priority. Yes. Who's really important in his life? Yeah, and it's not his latest girlfriend.
Not at all. No. The Christmas party really, really emphasized that, because the girl was very much like, yeah, I'm going to leave you to your boyfriend now. Yes. And he's like, what are you talking about? I was like, really? Come on.
Funny you should mention the Christmas party, because then that's another scene that I thought was actually really nicely put in there where you get Sherlock and basically slamming poor Louise Brealey, you know, and just in her character, and just like poor Molly was just getting humiliated by the moment. And he wasn't reading her, as we call it, when he breaks someone down. He wasn't reading her per se, it's just... You know, really doing his thing, which he normally does, is just pointing things out.
Right.
But brutally.
Well,
honestly,
he reads her like an object, as opposed to a human being. He's interested in everything but her emotions, which everyone else in the room can see.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, he doesn't look at her.
Right.
Mm-hmm,
The whole time he's doing his evaluation, he's looking at the presence, he's not looking at her face.
Right.
So, and everyone else is looking at her face and going,
everyone else is
he's
horrified.
Just focusing on the fact that here's this new thing, because he's been so bored, and this whole thing with Irene Adler comes in, so that addles his mind, haha. But then, so here he is reading it the way he normally does, because he's comfortable with that, being able to get that information out so cleanly. But then to add that little touch at the end where suddenly everyone's quiet and they're like, and John's like, Sherlock, and he puts two and two together, and you see that little light bulb go off. And so for that brief moment, he's like, oh,
well,
he
yeah.
just gives her that little kiss on the cheek.
Well, it wasn't even that Watson said the thing. He actually read the card and saw the card was for him. So everything
still had to connect it, you know, oops. That was it. But which is interesting, because then, you know, that scene itself, because we always know that Molly's been there for a reason, you know, that she's been suffering through these fools, not so gladly, but suffering through them, you know, through her job at the morgue. But knowing that scene at the beginning of the three episodes, to see where it comes in the last episode, was, I think, again, them thinking in broader terms, which I think was really cool.
Right. Well, you always knew she had a crush, but I mean, that episode really showed it was a little more than a crush for her. Mm-hmm. But I don't understand why at this point, because I'm just like...
Originally, you think she'd get a clue at this point.
Yeah, wow. I was like, after that. But then he then kissed her, so then I was like, okay, fine.
He put it together and he realized, you know, and we see how he treats... Una Stubbs, you know, Mrs. Hudson. So we know that he has
feelings
for people and affectation. So I think by him, you know, giving her that little kiss, it was his basic way of saying, you know,
sorry.
His version of sorry.
Right.
You know, which is to say, you know, oops. But that's about it.
Right.
So,
but he knew that would also mean more to her. So it was good. It was manipulative, but it was still good because he realized that he had screwed up.
Yeah.
So the basic emphasis of this one, like we said, was about the case, but it also showed, and Moriarty was more in the background in this one. He was very much, he was the guy on the phone giving little bits of information, and you really didn't see him that much.
Oh, yeah, and well, he was a presence, though. I mean, right. Let's face it, he was the one who was driving the action from behind.
And the thing that was interesting, too, is, you know, when he sent that text to our Mycroft, you know.
I was just about to bring up Mycroft.
Yeah, and saying, you know what, you know, oh, Mycroft, you know, it's this plane, you know, blah, blah, blah. So he's got the phone number of Mycroft. So, you know, that, well, the first time I watched the series, I didn't put those together, because then obviously in the third episode, you know, we
that
get
becomes
the information,
important.
Becomes very important that there has been this connection between Mycroft and Moriarty for a while. So I thought that was interesting.
Well, and I mean, not to take credit from her entirely, she got that top secret information on her own, mm-hmm. but she was thinking in smaller scale on how to, she was just maybe going right. to blackmail one guy.
Yeah, someone in the palace.
Right, so she was like, yeah, then Moriarty's the one who was like, no, think bigger.
Yeah.
So, and I like the idea that he is for hire. But what I was going to bring up with Mycroft was, in this particular episode, No, Sherlock is the one that screws up. Well, both of them kind of screw up in this episode because he's thinking, oh, I'll just use my brother who's really brilliant, not thinking about mixing his brother with this woman, how that's going to affect them and how that's going to change his behavior a little bit.
Yeah, which is true, because it kind of goes back to John and how these other male people, and including Lestrade, if you go that far out, you know, you've got these three very prominent male friends or, you know, relations, if you will, of Sherlock's, and each one of them to a degree looks out for him.
Right.
Because he's so focused in what he does and how he does it that he really is the kind of person that would like step off a cliff just because he's looking at the line of ants going somewhere. You know? So, so they really do. So it's really interesting in each of their ways. That's what they do. They protect him.
Yeah, but they kind of, my point is, Mycroft dropped the ball this time because he didn't see far enough ahead of where this was going to go, and it actually screwed him more than it helped him. Mm-hmm. And then he was in the position of, well, now I have to protect my brother.
Yeah.
You know, so that was cool. Allison, any other thoughts?
That's, you know, pretty much my feelings on the episode. I mean, overall, I thought it was a great episode, but as, you know, this is going to be a rant, but the typical with Moffat, he tends to screw up in the final act where he delivers something that, at least me personally, I find disappointing. And, you know, I've already discussed how I feel he treated Irene Adler in the mm-hmm. finale. And I just think that it's just, he drops the ball at the end.
I have to say, I did like the fact that the code ended up being I am Sherlock. I thought that was awesome.
It was so there in our face, but you don't know it until the end. You're like, oh, of course it was.
It says, I am locked.
Yeah. You're like, oh, duh. Yeah.
And I was like, of course, it's so obvious. So you say he drops the ball, but I thought that was actually really a brilliant little take at the end. And I thought that was great. And that even though you think through the whole episode he's being affected, but really he's taking her pulse.
Yeah, exactly. And he's watching her eyes as he's gazing at him. Yep.
Right. He's checking, you know, so he's actually doing his thing when you think he's actually being distracted. But, and it's not even so much that she's a woman that he's giving her this information. It's the fact that he shows off. That's what he does.
Yeah.
So you give him a code or a puzzle. Of course, he's going to solve it as quickly as possible and just spout out the answer because that's what he does.
Yeah.
He's not an intrigue special agent that keeps secrets.
No.
You know, so.
That would be really, really bad at that, actually.
Yeah. Exactly. He wants people to know how
good he is. As soon as he wanted to show off how smart he was, it would be all over.
Yeah. Yeah. He's not. He doesn't have a filter.
No.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that doesn't work. But anyway, so I think thumbs up for this episode.
I did. Yeah. I mean,
all right. Generally.
Yeah. You guys, I really like this one. I'm two thumbs way up. You guys are mediocre.
I like it all the way up to the third act.
Okay.
And then I have problems.
I liked it up until that very, 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 very end. But
okay.
Good enough.
Let's move on to the next episode, The Hounds of Baskerville.
Yes.
And I know this is actually another real Sherlock novel.
However, not even close.
Well, my however is their modernization of it just really, I was like, really, this is it? It was
They took the name. That's all they did.
It was so just over. Like, I've seen this story done way better.
Yeah.
And it was just so bad for me. And I like I said, I just rewatched everything, and I struggled. rewatching this one, in that I was doing other things. Because I couldn't just sit and watch it.
I appreciated the revisionism, you know, trying to rethink, you know, the castle and the moors, you know, and as this, instead, this military installation and all of that. I liked all that, you know. It's just that I don't think that what they had to go along with it was quite as strong. Because beyond that, it just kind of followed the same beats.
Yes, and I totally agree with that, too. It's funny because I'm usually a huge fan of Russell Tovey and as his character Knight in this one, Mr. Knight, Harry Knight or Harvard Knight, whatever it is.
Henry Knight,
thank you. You know, I think he did a perfectly good job because he has that sense of panicky urgency that comes well. And he tends to, he can cry at the drop of a hat because I think he did like 5 times in every episode of Being Human. So he's very good at that. And I totally appreciate him. He's the go-to guy for that kind of panicky anxiety. So kudos to him for that. I did think
he plays neurotic well.
There you go. But I think they did maybe put a little too much emphasis on him and his reactions and how it was affecting him. It's like, we get already that he's affected by this. I don't need to
see, like...
that
whole scene where he's in his house by himself at
night.
With
the gun and all that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That was filler, as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, my thought is they might have done that almost for him, because he is... They love him in England, and he's been in everything.
Well,
so
I get that, but it was just...
It just didn't
took
help
away.
The story.
And one thing I'm going to say, as much as I love the romance of Sherlock and Watson, and the first couple of times when people, you know, were thinking they were a couple... In this episode, I was like, oh, it's funny. But by the 10th time, like, this...
You're like, not funny anymore.
Not funny. Yeah, I was like, I'm done. Like, he goes on a date, and the woman's like, oh, he's your live-in. And she immediately leaves the date. And I was like, what's... Like, really?
Well, you know, I thought... That's funny, because I interpreted that as she found out that he wasn't necessarily being totally honest with her for what he was doing.
No, I mean, that's exactly how I interpreted it. Not because she thought that, you know, he wasn't... That he was... potentially gay.
Me too.
Literally, I watched this like last night. So like the next line she says, because somebody said something about he's Sherlock's live-in, and she goes, she goes live-in, and then she starts to gather her stuff.
Yeah.
And then as a parting remark, she tells him to go hit on another guy in the bar. Like she says, that's like her parting thing she says to him.
Mm-hmm. So but what really gets her because the first thing that happens is what's his name from the installation,
Dr. Franklin.
Sits down and starts yammering away and talking about how he's really there for to get information and such and such, and that's what clues her in
that's
that this
she
is not a date.
Right,
where she starts getting pissed off.
I get that as well, but I just feel like they just overdid it this episode.
They did overplay the whole...
They overplayed it this week. I mean, normally it's cute, but I felt like on Baskerville, it was just... They went over that line.
Well, especially since the owner and his partner in the pub
were
together, which you find out at the end. And I have to say a little shout out to my buddy who was playing the owner of the bar. He was in Robin Hood, that great series. He played Little John. So I'm like, yay. So I was happy to see him in their cameo. But what I thought was interesting, of the redeeming qualities of this episode, because of the three, this was probably my least favorite. Yeah, the weakest.
Yeah.
But I did like those little moments. First of all, when Sherlock decides to take the sugar because he thinks that's what did it and just goes ahead and dose him anyway. It's like, oh my God. My first thought was, you are so dead when John finds out. You are so dead. And of course he was. You know. It's
the thing that's so bad about it is that Watson thinks that Sherlock's actually being nice to him for a change.
To make him,
he's like, you made me coffee. You know I don't take sugar in my coffee. But and he drinks it anyway because Sherlock made it for him. And I was just like,
oh my God, how dumb are you, really?
It's like, you are so going to get it. And he
it wasn't that he was dumb. He was trying to be sweet.
Yes,
and
he
was like,
fell for it.
That's sweet.
He fell for it.
Sherlock is being manipulative.
Exactly, which he can do even to his friend, as he puts. So there were, and that brings me to what I
liked about
the
episode. That was actually
the
best part.
Is that there were moments in there. So even though we find out that when Sherlock does go to the Cove for the first time to the Marsh, that when he thinks he does see the Hound and panics, and they go back to the lodge, and you know he's in the pub, and he's like panicking in the chair, you know, and John's oblivious until he finds out that Sherlock really is scared. Well, you know, then there's a question where we all, of course, if you're watching it the first time, you might think, oh, he really did see it and he's freaking out. You know, obviously we find out later it's the chemicals. But I like that idea where even Sherlock is like, what the hell, you know, I can't believe I saw what I saw. But if you, his classic quote, you know, if you take away the impossible, what's left is the possible. And he's like, and I'm pretty sure I think I saw it, you know. And so, you know, it kind of, he yells at John, you know, that thing about, I don't have friends. And so I like how they took that and, you know, brought that back later, because he's already, you know, he's already yelled at John when he's trying to help him. He's, you know, duped and doped or presumably doped John. You know, so he's taking these hits at John, who's his friend. And so it made sense for them to come back to that and have John have his, you know, his comeuppance to it, or, you know, his retort to it, and basically give him the cold shoulder, you know, and do this whole thing and basically say, you know, I thought you didn't have any friends. And so it was really nice how they skip a beat, and Sherlock says, well, I don't have friends. I just have a friend. I was like, oh, you know, so even though there was like it was a weak episode, I think just the interplay between the two of them at certain points in it were worthwhile. Whereas the overall storyline
was a waste. Yeah. But I did
for
think,
character, I think it was
for good. Character. It was that moment where he basically tells John, you know, I have one friend, and they stare at each other. It was like tears. And then John starts to walk away to do something. And he keeps saying, you're brilliant. He's like, oh, you're overplaying it now. Right. It's like, you had me before. We're all good. You don't need to keep doing this.
Yep.
But it's really about something else entirely. Yeah. I thought that they're trying to... It's so weird because this is a British show, but we're watching it in America. Mm-hmm. So when the guy says, call me on my cell, I didn't think anything of it.
Right, I know. Yep.
Yeah, they actually had to say that later as an anachronism before I went, oh yeah, that's right.
Totally. Isn't that funny? It got all of us, I think.
Yeah. Anybody in the marriage is like, oh, what's so strange about that?
Didn't even blink.
Yeah. Yep. So that was a good play on the difference between what Americans say and what British people say. And I was like, oh, that was a clue. All right. I just wasn't in that mindset. See, on the other end, if he had said, if we'd been in America, somebody said mobile, I would have been like, oh, that's very British of
it's
you.
It's a little different. Yeah.
So that was a nice little clue. Like that clue I thought was good.
Yep.
The rest of it I thought was yawn worthy. Even the hound looked stupid. Like that was a bad
the hound was terrible.
Bad CGI hound. Bad dog. Though I have to say that guy showing up in the gas mask was a little creepy, because they were all freaking out on the drug and they were seeing all kinds of stuff and everything was all twisted, and then they look over and see this guy in a gas mask. And they were like, what the heck? And I was like, okay, that was a little scary. Like,
right there was
a little bit scary. Other than that, then nothing else was scary. Oh, well, what about when Watson saw the code and he thought it was Morse code? And it was really that couple making out. Yeah.
Yeah, that was very, very strange. But, you know, another, what is it, red herring, you know, just to...
That was a bizarre red herring.
Okay, and what do we have to say about the Mind Palace?
Oh, the thing that was funny about the Mind Palace, I watched The Mentalist, and in The Mentalist, he talks about his memory, he calls it his memory palace.
Okay. Yeah.
So I'm so used to him talking about his memory palace, and he describes how it works and whatever, and then Sherlock said my Mind Palace,
Sherlock,
I was like...
But Sherlock going through the motions of it, you know, I thought that was, I appreciated it, but I have to admit, I thought it was a little on the corny side.
Especially
he's like
with
flipping
the
stuff through. Exactly. You know, the way they did that. And I'm like, well, I was pushing it a little far.
Well, because the whole point of it is it's in your head. You don't need to do a little hand wave
to show how Sherlock thinks or to get to it. Yeah. So I thought that was a little corny, but.
Yeah.
Although, you know, that did bring up one thing. As soon as he mentioned that, I suddenly was aware of the fact that, especially in this episode, but really throughout season two, they've kind of abandoned what they used to have in season one, which are all those little on-screen words that told you what he was thinking and what he was looking at.
Right.
What was going through his head, which was really cool and unique, and I like that
cinematically. They did it in the first one. They did it in
the first episode.
Scandal, because when he first saw Irene Adler,
a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, he could, because he went back to John.
When he was looking at her specifically.
Her and John, he had to compare them to...
They kind of abandoned that. There was virtually none of it in the second episode, and I don't think there was any in the third either.
Not that I recall.
As a note too, in case anyone thinks that it was completely scot-free, Andrew Scott. Episode two, don't forget, did have that little bit of Moriarty in it when Sherlock was with everyone else at the end before the gas mask guy, Dr. Franklin. Everyone was imagining their worst nightmares, and Sherlock, it was Moriarty.
Oh, okay.
So that was, I thought that was kind of a nice touch too, that would be the one thing that he feared at the moment still is it's Moriarty as his nemesis, if you will.
All right, let's wrap up episode two, and basically we're kind of like,
yeah.
If you had to skip one, this would be the one to skip.
It had moments again. The characters, the character development between the two of them was good.
There was some character development. Some of them was good, yeah. But I mean that's like 10 minutes out of an hour and a half, I'd say. Yeah. So you know, if you're tight for time, this would be the one to skip. All right. Next, we want to talk about the last episode, which is called
the Reichenbach Falls.
Yeah. Right. Which spells what? Somebody Brooke? Robert Brooke?
Yes, Robert Brooke.
There's not enough O's for that.
Well, no, it doesn't. It's not an acronym. It's German.
Oh, it's the German.
It's
okay.
A German translation.
Okay, because I was like...
Yeah, no.
I was like, wait a minute, that doesn't work.
Yep, no, that's what it means in German.
This episode actually, strangely, was a little confusing for me. Because he was doing so many cases at the beginning that I didn't understand where this was going. And then Moriarty was doing his cases. And, well, he did his heist where he used he used great apps to break into a bank.
The prison.
And the Tower of London. Right. And he just used it with an app. And you're just like, what? And he's like, I have a secret code that only I have and I can break into anything. And
every tech person in the world who watched that went, yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, that was kind of the point.
But it was great misdirection because it made you think that he had this magical code to do everything. And then, you know, when they resolve it at the end, it was like, oh no, that's so basic. How did I not figure that out?
Well, because it goes to the whole thing. If you eliminate all the impossible, only the possible.
Right.
It's true. So his whole, Sherlock's problem is that he always thinks things are really complicated. He's always, especially when he's dealing with Moriarty, he assumes that Moriarty is thinking on his level, so it's going to be really complicated. So it doesn't even occur to him that the guy just paid some people off to do it.
Well, exactly. There's that, and the fact that when he thinks he's figured out that computer code, and he's got like, oh, it's the kind of the Morse code with his fingers.
Yeah, because he gave him something really complicated.
Right. But because you totally could understand that Sherlock would understand and get Morse code, that would be like one of the things, because it's the whole thing about him knowing how many ashes there are on cigarettes and things like that. So that's part of his repertoire of things to know. But we know that he basically relies on John for almost everything on the internet. We know Sherlock gets online sometimes, but he's the one that's looking over John's shoulder for what's on the blog and all this stuff. Because he doesn't want to, in the earlier episodes last year, you know, the first season, you know, the joke was, you don't even know that, you know, that the, you know, do you even know that the sun, you know, that the earth revolves around the sun? You know, this joke about the
knows how many planets
stuff.
That there were,
You know, the practicalities of things. And Sherlock's like, that doesn't matter to me. So you could totally understand that Sherlock would not know that some stupid little, like, binary code wouldn't be the answer to, like, the computer systems of the world.
Right.
So
and the code would be much longer than what...
So him falling for it totally made sense, but I was mad because I fell for it. I'm like, of course it couldn't be. I work in IT. I know this. So I was like, oh, well played. But yeah, overall, the whole episode, you're right, a lot happened. It was a very jam-packed episode because with all of the cases...
They were doing so many cases.
But, you know, obviously to set up that whole idea, like you were saying earlier about the first episode in the season, you know, that they were starting to get more out there and more noticed. And the whole point of it, I think, was to set up this idea that it's splashed on the pages. Everyone knows him. You know, he's out there. And that, of course, it makes you wonder if that was part of Moriarty's plan, because how could he have him have this great fall
without
building him up first?
Yeah, exactly. So the question is, like, did Moriarty have anything to do with that? Because we know he did with that one reporter,
right?
Obviously. So the question is, and we know he was able to get into those three institutions to unlock them and do whatever. We also know that he was able to get to the jury, so we can easily see him behind, you know, getting the publicity out for all of these others.
I will
as
have
well.
To say that one thing, the jury, the whole courtroom thing, boring. Whenever you do a courtroom, it's always boring.
Well, at least they made it brief, so.
Well, it wasn't that brief. It was just, like, are we in a courtroom? Really? Come on. Well, and they had to have him testify. I was like, it was so great. Oh, what was great about that was when Watson was telling him, he was like, don't do this. Don't try to be smart. He's like, so I should be myself. No, like, are you listening to me?
Well, but I think unfortunately that courtroom scene, because I had to think about that too. I'm like, what was the whole point of that anyway? And then I realized it's because Moriarty needed to be caught for the crimes that he committed, which were supposedly the at least obviously the one where he was caught red-handed in the Tower of London with the crown jewels. So he needed to be caught for that, so that he could bring Sherlock out and have him be splashed on the front pages that, hey, look, this guy that was so clever he could break into the crown jewels is calling for Sherlock. So that made it very high profile. So Sherlock had to be there in court to do that. But Moriarty also had to be free to finish his plan. So he had to bribe the jury. So I realized that there's a purpose for it. It might have gone on a little long because they were trying to play up, again, Sherlock's inability to deal with like normal situations like a courtroom. But I see the purpose of it in setting up Moriarty against Sherlock and having it be so big.
I see the purpose. I just felt like they could have done it in a better, more interesting way. And also it felt like the show kind of shifted gears like 3 or 4 times. So
it did.
So you're doing a bunch of little cases, and then now it's a courtroom story. And now it's a case of mistaken identity, and now he's a fugitive, and now it's like come on. So it's not necessarily a bad thing. It felt like it was too many things. I felt like they should have pared it down a little.
Well, it's interesting because when I first saw it and then I told my friend to watch it, you know, because she was skeptical about it. And I said, no. I said, because she was watching like pretty much like a week behind me. And basically I said, look, you know, just so you know, for Reichenbach Falls, I said the first 40 minutes, meh, but the second 40 minutes, holy crap. You know, it was like, it just that, because I think that's where it really kicked up. As they started to escape, because I like the fact that we started to get, you know, this question of, you know, Lestrade being brought in and starting to question and having to really stand up. And ultimately, as we can see, side on Sherlock, you know, and basically, even though he's got the two that work for him are saying, you know, oh,
well, those
we don't
guys
trust
are,
this guy.
You
they
know,
are.
And they, that's the thing.
Course. Yeah.
That's the thing that bothers me the most is that they pretty much have established those two characters are idiots from season one.
Mm-hmm. They don't like him.
They don't like him, and we don't like them.
Yes.
So them bringing this up just is so irritating. And I...
I think that's why they had to bring it to their boss, because it couldn't stop with Lestrade, because we all think like Lestrade. We're like, we get it. We know this guy's amazing, so these guys are idiots.
So you had to have somebody who was pushing it.
Exactly.
And you had to have someone who absolutely had it in... for Sherlock Holmes and wanted to find a reason to prove that he was not who he appeared to be.
Absolutely, yeah.
I get it. Okay, you talk a little bit about... you haven't talked yet, Allison, about this episode.
Okay, well, you've basically been covering all the things that I thought, you know, that it was a little bit too frenetic. Too many things packed in at once. I think they could have done better if they'd sat down and said, okay, this is really the tone we want to hit and let's do that. Instead of feeling like it's jumping around from genre to genre. I don't know that I think it got better in the last 40 minutes. I think it just got more active in the last 40 minutes. I mean, yes, you saw the noose tightening, but it also was just a lot of knees bent running around. And I thought that I really wanted to see more thoughtfulness put into it. There were a lot of things that were done that felt like they were just left hanging by the end, particularly his visit to Molly. Still don't know what that really was about.
Well, we know what it was about.
That was the whole point.
Yeah, the visit. Yeah, the visit to Molly was how he faked his death.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, but explain to me how that's done. Unless she's going to clone him another body. I don't know.
Well, that's the whole thing.
That was he asked her
exactly.
to do.
That's the whole point of the episode.
Exactly.
Is you get to the end and you're like, okay, he's not dead. How did he fake it?
So,
you only know that he has one ally of Molly, and that's.
Yep.
I wanted to get to that last.
Yeah, now we're here.
Which is, that scene on the roof was actually really pretty good. I didn't guess was that Moriarty would shoot himself. Like, I didn't see that coming. And I don't think Sherlock didn't see that coming either. And I guess that was the final play. Like, even if a final... I was like, to beat Sherlock, you're really willing to do that? Like,
the thing is, he thought...
Yes, he is that crazy.
He is crazy, but he thought that he had beaten Sherlock.
Yes.
He was like, I've beaten you. You know, you're just an ordinary person. So, the thing that I'm not sure I buy is the turn. Where he looks into Sherlock's eyes... and realizes that Sherlock is like him and not an ordinary person. So then, okay, now I will kill myself. Like, I'm not sure if I buy that turn. That's a pretty big turn to go from you're ordinary and I'm done with you and I got to play with regular people now to I must figure out a way to defeat you so I'll kill myself. Like, that was a big stretch. Like, the acting was great. No doubt about that. And I'm just not sure if I buy that part, but okay.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there, absolutely. I just think it felt like, well, Moriarty dies here because Moriarty dies here.
Right.
You know, that's what the script calls for, so it's going to happen no matter what. But it seemed like as soon as he found out that Sherlock Holmes really did live up to his expectations, mm-hmm. that would be all the more reason why he'd want to stay alive.
Exactly.
And just keep the game going.
Yeah.
It seemed like he would be more inclined to kill himself if he was just faced with nothing but a world full of ordinary people. Because then he's got nothing else to go on for. Well, then he's got no one to really try to defeat. And at this point, it seems like the opposite of that. So why kill himself at the moment where he thinks he's got someone who can play games with for almost eternity?
Well, I think it might have been because I think this was his... this was all his cards on the table for Moriarty. It's like, it feels like he put everything he possibly had into it. And that the way I looked at it and some of the friends I talked to about it, we just kind of interpreted it as, you know, it's... Moriarty realized that, you know, this was his big hand, and he thought for sure, without a doubt, that he had Sherlock. He had him, because even, you know, no matter what...
He calculated everything.
He considered everything. It was all laid out perfectly. All of that information was out there. And no matter what, if Sherlock didn't fall off that building, then
his friends would die.
It's like, that was all set up. And Sherlock knew that he wasn't lying, because there were assassins after him earlier in the show. It's like, you know, that were there around him. So he knows that that would absolutely be true, and that Moriarty and his hired guns would do that within a second. So Moriarty knew that he had put all his cards on the table for this one. And so when he realized, you know, that Sherlock, you know, had found that one opening that just kind of seemed... We don't know what Sherlock would have done to manipulate, because like you said, you know, hey, as long as... You said you can't call them off, or you don't want to, or something, you know. So I think Moriarty might have looked at it as, okay, well, maybe he can defuse this situation, and that's all that he has. And so to him, maybe being in his psycho crazy mode, that was the only way to win is to shoot himself, to kill himself, because then Sherlock didn't have him as that out.
Right.
And Sherlock really did have to get off that roof, because otherwise people will die.
Right.
So I think that was really part of his, it's like he didn't, I don't think it was his intention to do it. But I just think that really, for him to feel like he absolutely won and closed every single door for Sherlock, that was the only thing that he could do.
Okay, so now we need to speculate on how the heck did he... Well, one thing, before we get to that, the conversation with Watson when he was on the roof was gut-wrenching. Like, that made
absolutely.
Me... That
well,
was...
And it was amazing. And I don't know if this is my interpretation or not, because I cried the first time I was watching it.
I did,
who
too.
Didn't, right? You know, raise your hand, right? But funny, because when I watched it again, I was like... Because when I watched it again, I'm like, okay, he's obviously, we all know he's making Watson stay in the same, in a particular place, because he's orchestrated it.
Right.
It can only be viewed from there.
Right.
Otherwise it won't work. It's a big magic trick, you know, so Watson has to stay where he is. And to me, and then I started to second guess it. I'm like, oh, because, okay, no question, Sherlock completely, at this point, you know, he absolutely adores Watson in his life. I mean, you know that at this point.
Right.
You know, he can't say it. Maybe he doesn't really... know how to deal with it, but he does. So part of it is the tears are real because of everything that has to be done, and he knows how it's going to affect Watson afterwards. But part of it is because we've seen in some of the first or second episode of the first season, when he was talking to that one woman whose husband had died, and I forget what it was, he had to interrogate this woman, and the way for him to do it, they were out on site, he pretended to cry like he knew the guy, like, oh, I'm so sorry. And so my second thought was, oh crap, he can be manipulative and he can cry on cue.
Except I don't think he was.
But he might have needed to do that to emphasize to John
that he really is about to John.
Yes, exactly. He needed to sell it no matter what.
That's true.
So I think that's why I think it was a mixture of that, of, you know, of knowing that he knows that it would affect John because he understands how important John is to him, and because also
he needs the magic trick to
sell it. Absolutely.
So, and I felt so bad for John, especially when he's in his therapy and he can't even say it, and then the whole "don't be dead" thing. Yep. I was like, and then I was just mad at Sherlock, but I understood why Sherlock did it. I mean, you get it; he's saving his life, but.
Yeah. All three of them.
Yeah, but I was just like, oh, that's so gut-wrenching.
It is.
Okay, so, magic trick.
Okay, so here's what I think, and this is what a lot of people are thinking, and we may all be totally wrong, but the idea is that since Sherlock had time, he was the one that asked Moriarty to come to St. Bart's.
He picked the location.
He picked the location, so he knew that at that point. Now, my question is, I don't think he knew that this would be a requirement. That's my only concern.
He did know. There's a scene, because when I watched it last night, there's a scene where he's like, okay, Moriarty has manipulated all this stuff, so it's okay. Everything is leading to this point. There's only one play left, and he stopped.
Okay.
And so he realized that it had to end with his death.
So that's good. So that is taken care of.
Yes,
so
he knew that he was gonna have to fake his own death.
Awesome. Okay, so that is good. So as he's on that roof, that's the point of him meeting with Molly. To say, Molly, I need your help because she works in the morgue. So here's what we think has happened. Fake body, or a real body that's dead.
Right.
That essentially, the way that Sherlock is standing on the edge of the building, he's looking down, he sees people starting to gather, who we think are all hired to be there from him.
Right.
There's a lorry that pulls up, so we figure what happens is
there's something on that truck.
Yeah, there's something on the truck. So we figure John is in a particular location, so he only sees Sherlock. And as we see Sherlock fall, you can see that he goes behind, like, the edge of another building or something on the other side, because John is his view of the street is obstructed. He sees Sherlock fall about halfway down. So we're all saying Sherlock falls onto the truck that's padded or something. We can obviously see that Molly and her friends or whoever she is.
Because those guys got there really quick.
Really fast. Put another body out. Or what people are saying, too, is that, he was able to get off that truck and lie there.
Right.
And maybe what he needed Molly for, because if we don't need an actual body, what he may have needed Molly for is some sort of a drug that slowed his pulse.
So John does check his pulse.
But he's checking the pulse of the guy who is, he looks like Sherlock. I mean, it's him. So we think he's just faking it, and the thing is, don't forget the bicyclist that knocked John's down.
Yeah, because that gave him time.
It gave him time, and it disoriented John enough so that as John went over with the crowd of people running around, he's now suddenly
overwhelmed. If you notice, the crowd is actually pushing John away.
They're jostling him, and they're very...
Yeah, he keeps saying, I'm a doctor. And in a normal crowd, if someone says, I'm a doctor, they let you through.
And
in this case, they did not do that at all.
So they only gave him a chance to look at him briefly and to check his pulse.
And then to pull him away.
And then they take the body. So that's the general consensus.
Well, because I noticed, and also that truck disappears after.
Yes.
Like, that truck is there for his fall, and then after he falls, that truck drives away.
Yep. So the question is, did they need another body, or is it just that they needed a chance for him to fall on something that John couldn't see?
Or, because the only thing is, you hear the thump.
Maybe that was the body.
And that's what I was thinking. I was like, that would only have worked if they timed it to where he falls on the truck and they dump the other body, and then when he's disoriented, they switch.
Yep, yep. And they rushed his body. And they rushed his body
out of there really quick. Really quick.
Really quick. Yeah.
Because I was like, man, I've never seen anybody picked up off the street that fast.
I know, they're like, nope, gotta go by. And meanwhile, they keep pushing John away. Some people have added speculation to it to say that they think that that as the bicyclist went through, he might have actually like jabbed Watson with like a quick
hallucinogen or something.
Yeah, something to
get him
more.
Yeah, I don't think anything that.
See, I don't think so either.
But I think that he was just slowing him down so he wouldn't get there in X amount of time.
Exactly. Right. So I think that's. But people are so there's these ancillary ideas attached to that. But I think that's the basic of it. Now the funny thing is, after the fact, of course, and once the speculation is out there, Gatiss actually has not been very vocal about it. He's been kind of sitting back and just being amused by it all, I think. But Moffat, of course, has things to say. So he's basically come out a number of times and said, well, all the clues are there and people have been missing a really big one. So of course everyone's like, do we believe him or not? Because he could be doing that just so that we don't get the satisfaction of knowing we figured it out.
Well, because I know a writer's worst nightmare is that he gives you a twist and everyone figures out the twist.
Exactly.
Well, the thing is, we know by showing Sherlock at the end, we all know that he's alive. So therefore he faked it. So now everyone's trying to figure out, how does he fake it? If you have a year to speculate on that, you're going to figure it out.
You are, yeah. So this is, I think this is the general going theory, but like we said, we'll see if anything else comes out later. I haven't seen anything lately that this is about as far as everyone's gone, so.
Well, I'm just glad we're going to do another season to resolve that. And I think, and unfortunately, I think the third season might be the last.
We'll see, depending.
Possible.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's just that the two actors, we have to pause every time they have to make a movie.
Movies.
They're making really big blockbuster movies, so I can't see them hanging out and doing.
But they love it though.
That's true.
They do. And if you've got a little passion project, I mean, look at how many actors take a break to do Broadway and stuff because they love it. So, if they have enough, if they do a season three, And again, they just they still love it. And
you know, and remember that in England, it's not like over here where, you know, you have to do a series and it's back to back to back to back to back and you can't just take a break.
Right.
There, you know, well, the series comes when they're able to.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they're perfectly happy with it. They can have huge breaks and it's no big deal. So I don't think that there's going to be a problem. I mean, if it's popular, if it gets the kind of ratings that it's been getting, we're going to get a series four. But it may not be until they're able to get their schedules coordinated.
Well, I also just feel like sometimes actors are kind of like, okay, I'm now a big star. See ya, peace.
Yeah.
So,
but I think these guys are good. I think they appreciate it immensely. They're all really proud of it.
I think that kind of thing is more American actors than British actors.
Yeah.
I think British actors are happy if they get a paycheck.
I usually think it's the other way around. They're always, like, every show I watch, after about three seasons, all the actors are like, okay, I'm tired, bye. And they all leave the show. So that's been my experience with the British actors.
Well, but not all the series have been like this where it's just three episodes.
So, yeah.
The other series are longer, at least six episodes.
You'd have to have a really short attention span to get bored of this.
I'm just saying.
But anyway, regardless, they're not going to even start filming this one until like early next year anyway, so we won't even see it until probably the fall. So another year.
I know this. I'm like, oh my
God. I want to cry. I know.
And then we only get three episodes. You have to wait forever, and then you get three. And it's just like,
what
really?
They've done to us.
All right. So I think that's it.
That's a thumbs up for Reichenbach.
Yes.
Yes.
It is a thumbs up. It's just, I just wish it was a little stronger in the beginning. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Cool.
But
Allison, you?
I just wish, I wish it'd been better paced. Okay. I said earlier, there was just a lot more stuff going on than I think they needed to stuff into it in the space of an hour. And I think that they could have paced that better. But other than that, yeah, thumbs up. Definitely.
All right, so that's it for this week's podcast. If you have any feedback or ideas of shows you want us to talk about over the summer, I've had one guy has voted for us to watch Boston Legal because I raved about William Shatner on Rookie Blue.
Right, yeah.
And he was like, let's talk Boston Legal. So I'll throw that out to you guys. Do you guys want us to talk about Boston Legal?
Or if anyone has any alternative ideas for how Sherlock might have faked his death.
Yes.
I'd love to hear that too.
Yeah, send us your ideas about that as well.
That's always fun.
Yeah.
So send all feedback to tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter. We're on Facebook. And you can listen to us on getthepointradio.com, Krypton Radio, Wheatonopolis, and iTunes. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.